Welcome everyone to the Belfast Men's Health Group podcast.
To the Belfast Men's Health Group first podcast with Professor Joe Sullivan from the Cancer Centre in Belfast. Today, Joe will give us some advice on what to look out for as far as cancer and how it affects men. But more than that, we're going to look into who is Joe Sullivan. We know just by the introduction that Joe is a professor of oncology, but he is also a musician, he's a father, and we'll get a wee bit more info as we go through the podcast. But before we get into the body of the podcast, let's hear a little bit of music composed by Joe.
Before my imagination became your destination, before your song was sung between lines, before disintegration of walls, our situation involved more freeze than ice. Before you really called my name, before I really heard you cry, you never thought you'd ever feel this way again. Now so do I. You ask me how long have I felt it so strong, and slowly I reply. After I'd gone between this song and right before your eyes, right before your eyes, before your reservations were heard in silent places, before the sound of you became mine, before we lost sight of all my limitations, right before our eyes, before you really called my name, before I really heard your cry, you never thought you'd ever feel this way again. Now so do I. You ask me how long had I felt it so strong, and slowly I reply. After I'd gone between this song and right before your eyes, right before your eyes.
Joe, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be here.
Thank you for agreeing to be our first guy on the podcast.
It's my pleasure.
So, Joe, tell us a wee bit about this particular piece of music. Maybe a wee bit of background of how you got involved in music. Who were your influences as a child? That sort of thing.
Well, the song that you just played is called Before. That's from my latest release, which is called Instead of Many Shades of Blue. Just released there really in the middle of the lockdown, so not exactly the ideal time to release music. That's my third album of original songs. And the song Before, it's really about the idea that life can change. If you think we often measure eras in the world like before Christ, or we'll be talking about before COVID at some point in the future. Yeah. And this song is about, I suppose, changes in my own life. In terms of going through a separation of my marriage and new relationship, and also just about the idea that it's possible to change, and that change is a good thing, and how you can look back on your life and think, yeah, I used to be like that, but now I'm like this. And so I think it's meant to be a positive look at change in one's life.
Okay. And going right on back to, you're going through some change, you've had some trauma, I guess, there.
Yes.
But if we take it right back to a boyhood, where are you from?
Yeah, well, I grew up in rural County Wexford, North County Wexford, near a town called Gorey, which some people will know. It's on the way down to the ferry in Rosslare, probably people know it best as. But a very, very rural area. Grew up there with my mum and dad and my three siblings. And a very happy childhood, growing up running around the fields and cycling my bike around the lovely, quiet streets of, quiet roads, really, country roads of Wexford. And so grew up there and went to school in a small village called Coolgraney, and then went to secondary school in the town of Gorey. And was there till about 17 years old, when I then moved to Dublin to go to university.
Right. And what was there any particular reason why you went into medicine? Or was it just you were particularly academic and that was the road that you wanted to go down?
My parents told me that from around age 5 I was talking about being a doctor. Okay. And when I was very young, about 4 years old, I was hospitalised with meningitis. I was seriously ill at that age, at 4. And I think maybe I was I was in hospital for maybe about a month or so. Okay. And so maybe that had some effect on me and seeing doctors and nurses in action. Mm-hmm. But from a very, very early age, I was talking about being a doctor, which is a bit odd because I really had nobody in my family had been to university or hadn't been medics.
Yes.
So, and I guess at school then I was quite an academic kid, I suppose, and was always talking about, I think maybe got diverted once or twice, maybe wanted to be a rock star in the early teens. I've come back to that again now. And I think it was very driven all the way through my schooling. And certainly when I got into secondary education, I was very, very focused on not just being a doctor, but studying in UCD in Dublin was very much part of my ambition, and I did that indeed.
Yeah. And so you're at school, you're on your way to UCD, you're in the medical field.
Yeah.
Music. When did you sort of begin to have music in your life? You play guitar.
Yeah, but I only started playing guitar probably in university years. Yeah. So when I was a young kid, I absolutely loved music. It really was probably my main interest. You know, I think from probably around age 10 or 11, I really got into it. And in the early days, it would have been whatever's in the charts.
Yes.
But fairly soon, from around 12 or 13 onwards, really got into Bob Dylan especially.
Yes.
So absolutely. And I still love Bob Dylan, listen to Bob probably nearly every single day, I would say, in some shape or form.
Yes.
At that age as well, U2 would have been the big act in Ireland. And I was probably aware of them from around age 10 or so, from around 1980 or onwards.
Yes.
So really, and to watch U2 especially growing into a band that was visible and famous worldwide. And seeing, they were one of the few representatives of Ireland on the world stage in a positive way. And so I really love them. And I think Bob, especially Bob Dylan, really inspired me to take up a guitar eventually.
Yeah.
And you know, to see, and especially loved how he could tell a story and how the lyrics were very important.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just the melody, it wasn't just the way you played it.
Yeah.
It was that what was being said was important.
Yeah.
And I think U2, again, I think a lot of their lyrics were very socially aware, politically aware. I think I've always liked that slant on music as I was growing up.
Well, I know they're probably a wee bit earlier. We're probably from the same generation, but the Beatles, the Who, particularly the Who, I absolutely love them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the strongest thing, one of the best things that's ever come out of the UK has been music, especially. I mean, the Beatles, and then after Bob, Beatles would have been the next thing I really got into.
Yeah.
So I sort of came to them. I was probably born in the wrong decade. More, I probably should have been a teenager in the 60s, really. But absolutely love the Beatles, their harmonies, the songwriting, and also the production, especially towards the end of their recording career, how they spent so much time in the studio. And I used to dream about being in a recording studio, seeing photographs or seeing footage of Abbey Road, and especially Sgt. Pepper's, when they really were just let run riot and really work on their harmonies, work on the, much more so than had been done before. When Bob Dylan recorded albums, he often recorded the whole album in 2 days. Where Sgt. Pepper's took a couple of months. And I love that idea that you took time over something. And so I still love the Beatles, and especially the harmonies now.
Yeah. No, without a doubt, music, I suppose, and being Irish.
Yeah.
There's traditional music, any any value to you?
Yeah, well, certainly the first instrument I took up was the tin whistle, which a lot of Irish school kids, I guess, which is a fairly simple instrument and fairly brutal, unless it's played properly. You know, when you hear good players, you really think who can really get a tone out of it. But when I was playing it, playing things like Bawdy and Isle of Mead and horrendous tunes like that, played very badly by myself. But I guess it was the first instrument I could actually play a tune on and somebody could say, oh, that's a tune. And it also helped me realise that I could play by ear. So I could figure out how to, I could sort of work out the notes and figure out tunes and play by ear and play pop songs on the tin whistle, which isn't a good thing to do, I can tell you.
I think you're musically, so you've got the music,
you've
got the medicine background
now.
Now you're here in the cancer centre, we're taking a massive jump forward.
Yes.
Does music have an impact or play a role in your current position within the cancer centre?
Yeah. It does on a number of fronts. I mean, as I've become, you know, gotten more involved in producing music and recording music myself and performing music, I really incorporate it into my life, especially as a way of generating both publicity and money for my favourite charity, the Friends of the Cancer Centre. So it's kind of grown with my career that I've been performing music, recording music, and really giving all the proceeds to that charity. And then I guess my own patients become aware, especially my long-term patients, become aware that I play music and come to gigs and are interested in that. And I really think that music is something, and I always talk to patients about music and about how they relax and how they can distract themselves from thinking about what can be very difficult medical journey.
So it plays a part in the treatment.
It does, I think. And I've had, you know, when you talk to people, I always like to understand what makes people tick. Whether it's music or sport or whatever it might be that helps them, because I don't like just talking about their scan results or their blood results or how they're doing. I like to understand a little bit about them, and music is a very common theme, and especially people who live on this island, music is really part of the fabric of how we live our lives here. So I think music is a great way to relax. Certainly helps me cope with stress, and I can, because I write songs now, I can express myself through that. So it's become a bigger part of my working life as years have gone by.
Well, without a doubt, music is, I think, a big part of my life.
Yeah.
It certainly helps me relax.
Yeah.
And I would promote it in the hospital. It is, it's wonderful.
Yes.
So now, you're, again, moving on, you're climbing the ladder, shall we say.
Yeah.
You're now at the top of the tree. You're a consultant, you're a professor, you're at the top of your profession.
Okay.
What advice can you give for that drive or determination or that devotion which is required to get to the top?
Well, I mean, whether I'm at the top or not is definitely questionable, but what has helped me get to where I've got to is I've always been very clear on where I was going and why I wanted to get there. So for me, especially when it comes to medicine and academic medicine, I guess, which got me into becoming a professor ultimately, was, you know, research and trying to be part of discovering new treatments and new ways of doing things. It's been very focused on the mission, which is to try and improve the life of cancer patients. Because once I became an oncologist and got into that field, it's very clear that we're a long way from solving cancer. Mm-hmm. So there's a journey to go. And for me, I felt my part of that journey was to help to be part of the discovery of new things, new treatments. So I stayed very focused on goal and very focused on the patients who are afflicted by this condition and their families and their wider family circle. And by staying focused on that there was an unmet need or that we're trying to improve the lives of patients, mm-hmm. I could see my role in that was becoming an academic and developing new treatments and trials, etc., but also in becoming a better doctor. Both in terms of knowing what to do with the right treatments, but also understanding the holistic approach, the person that's affected, their family, all that type of thing. So for me, what's helped drive me is very much staying focused on the goals, and to me, being sure that I can look in the mirror and say, yes, that's a valuable goal. That's something that's worth aiming for, rather than just aiming to be a professor or aiming to be a consultant. I always thought about it as aiming to be better at being able to deliver on the ultimate mission, which is maybe helping patients get through cancer better.
Perfect. And how are we? I'm sure you've seen a change over your career in medicine.
Yes.
What are the new research and development sort of results coming through for cancer? Are we?
Well, I suppose I've been, especially.
We're a long way away, but we're.
We're making good progress. There's been massive progress made. And if I just focus on prostate cancer, which has been my, I suppose, main career focus or disease focus for the last 20 years or so, it's unrecognizably better compared to 20 years ago when I started in that field. You know, we've got a 40% improvement in chance of survival. I mean, in men, you know, there's a 40% chance, less chance of dying of prostate cancer now. And that's thanks to a number of developments, I think most especially in radiotherapy. And that's something that we've really led on here in Belfast, radiotherapy developments, that we can now give a much higher dose, much more accurately, with less side effects and much higher cure rates than we used to even 5 or 6 years ago. And along with that, then, understanding the biology of the disease, so understanding the genetics of prostate cancer, what drugs really help the radiotherapy work, and also which patients don't need treatment at all. That's a very big, important part of prostate cancer. So it's unrecognizably different. I think still way too many men suffer and die from prostate cancer, so there's a long way to go still, but we've made massive progress. And similarly, in many other cancers as well, I would say breast cancer, bowel cancer, testicular cancer, but there are cancers, again, where we really haven't made the amount of progress we'd like to. I think lung cancer, brain cancer, stomach and pancreas cancers are examples where we really still have a long way to go.
I guess it's very good because it leads right into the next question around prevention.
Yeah, yeah.
What would be the main sort of preventative messages you would give to men? But I guess that across the board, men, women, just on cancer.
Well, number one, Paul, is one that's very close to your heart and very close to your career, and cigarette smoking. It's still, I think, especially for cancers of the lung, head and neck, and upper part of the GI tract, the stomach and pancreas, smoking still is by far and away the biggest preventable cause of cancer. So if we could get rid of smoking, honestly, we could cut the cancer service in half.
Well, we're down to about 18%.
That's fantastic. And again, I think
we're making progress.
I think there's been massive progress in that and in understanding, and also in the legal framework in society. And smoking is becoming, it's starting to become something that's just not popular. And the days when somebody would just, without asking, you'd light up a cigarette in your house, I think those days are gone, thankfully.
So
we're moving in the right direction. But then wider lifestyle issues as well. So I think keeping fit and healthy, and that's, you know, regular exercise, trying to watch the diet, especially eating lots of fruit and veg. The same things that are good for our heart and our lungs and our mental health are also very good at reducing the risk of cancer. And I think particularly bowel cancer, prostate cancer, breast cancer, we know that countries where, for example, obesity is a big problem, you also see higher rates of bowel, breast cancer as well. And that's really to do with the fact that there seem to be a similar type of etiology, a similar kind of cause of these cancers, to do with bad diet and being overweight. But of course, being overweight and not fit has massive impact on our heart health and mental health. So the same, and it's really about embracing life. When I think about it, again, if you think about just telling people don't smoke, don't drink, I mean, that's all very well. Those messages are kind of the very negative. I try and look at it in a more positive way. You know, you'll have a much more fulfilling and enjoyable life if you can, as much as possible, move towards an exercise, better diet, etc. It's good all around.
And during the COVID crisis, up in Antrim, I've seen a huge number of people out walking.
Yeah, that's great.
A huge number of people running.
Yeah.
A huge number of people cycling.
Yeah, you can't buy a bike now. The bikes are all sold. I was trying to buy a bike for my daughter last week. You can't get a bike online or in a shop. It's amazing. And it's got to be a positive outcome from this pandemic.
So fingers crossed that is a positive outcome.
I hope so.
Coming from the COVID pandemic.
Yes.
Okay, Joe, we've gone very, very quickly. We've only got one more question.
Okay.
And that is really, if you hadn't pursued a career in medicine, was there anything else that you'd like to have done? Now, I know that we've talked a bit about music, and maybe that's what you, maybe that's your answer, or maybe not.
Well, I think it certainly would be, if it wasn't going to be medicine or sort of biomedicine, I think it would be some sort of creative industry, and I think it would be, music would be the obvious thing for me. I'd like to, you know, writing and being creative with thinking. And I think it's one of the real examples of how, you know, we separate ourselves from the animals. I mean, we're very closely related to the animals, and I love animals. Yes. But what really separates us is this creativity.
Yes.
And when you see a healthy society, you see creativity coming from it. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to have been involved in, you know, more involved in music especially, and writing of music especially, and performing that. It's difficult to make a career in that, and we talked about the COVID-19 pandemic. It's had a massive impact on the creative industries generally. And may, you know, whether it's be the sort of front of house musicians or performers, but also the back of house sound people, the visual people, you know, we really are going to have to look after those folks. You know, in these islands here, creativity, music, poetry, writing is such an important part. We used to be the island of saints and scholars, and I think the idea that we could, you know, Ireland is so famous for music and poetry and writing. And it'd be such a shame if we can't support those people. So I'd love to have been involved in that. Maybe I'm glad I'm not dependent on that for money right now, because I think it's going to be tough times for those folks. Mm-hmm. But that probably is where I would have gone. If not then, I would have maybe followed my dad into building or carpentry.
All right, very good. And I guess you've already said a wee bit about Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
And we're talking a bit about the Beatles and the Who.
Yes.
Anybody else that sort of floats your boat?
Yeah, I think the people who I listen to most regularly would be people like Ron Sexsmith. He's a Canadian singer-songwriter. I really love him. I'm quite slow to take on, you know, listen to new music. Mm-hmm. But the kind of things I've been listening to recently, Dermot Kennedy, he's a Dublin guy, fantastic guy, really brilliant singer-songwriter. I love all the ballad singers as well, like Christy Moore. But I've been quite slow to take on new music. My kids are always trying to get me to listen to new stuff, but I'm slow to do it.
And just on that, now you've mentioned your kids.
Yes.
Your son.
Yes.
You and your son came and did a wee,
that's
wee
right.
gig for us one day.
That's right.
And your son is a lovely singer.
Yeah.
Has he ambitions to?
Yeah, very much so.
Go into the.
Yeah, so Oisin's my youngest guy. He's just turned 17, and he's sung on my albums. He's sung his backing tracks. He, just this weekend, actually, he's helping me record some audiovisual stuff for a medical conference. We're recording some music. He himself then is writing songs right now, although he hasn't let me listen to any of it yet. But so I think music will definitely form part of his life somehow.
Yes.
But he also intends to study medicine as well at some point.
All right, okay. So he's going to be like his dad.
Well, yeah, something like that. I hope he does better than his daddy.
Okay, Joe, I think that we've probably concluded. What we'll do now is we'll finish with a wee piece of Joe's music. Have you got a music, Joe, that you'd like to finish with, a song?
Yes, there's another song from my new album. It's called All About You. And this is a song, to give you an example, this song is on one of the Spotify playlists right now. And the Spotify playlist is called It's Complicated. So it's a song about complicated life.
Very good. Well, Joe, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks,
brilliant,
Paul.
As always.
Thank you so much. Really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you. Think of you in his arms without first colliding square with the wake of the star that led us to this wonderful impasse where I'm all about you and you're all about me too and you're all about me. I can't sit around, see how it goes, or wait till all is said and die without knowing. More colors turning red in the range of your glow, and I'm all about you, and you're all about me too, and you're all about me. Can't think of you in his arms, reflecting on this thought and the way that you are, has brought me to this place in uncharted earth where I'm all about you and you're all about me too and you're all